Welcome back to the Odd Man Rush. I'm Aaron Brown. I'm here with Ross Devenport and Wes Goldstein. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good,
unfortunately,
thank you.
Greg is out today, so I have to have hosting duties. But I guess we'll get right into it. It's the NHL seems to be rearing its ugly head with some pretty nasty hits and checks and goalie running as of late. Couple of suspensions or one suspension handed down this past weekend with Tuomo Ruutu getting 3 games for his hit on Darcy Tucker. And the other news coming out this weekend was that Mike Richards, who had a pretty strong hit, solid check on Florida's David Booth, he does not get suspended or fined. So, Wes, your take on the violence at this point so early in the season?
Well, you know, it's funny because this is like, you know, I guess playoff level intensity, and it's starting really early, and you're seeing teams, you know, get into the physical spirit, which, you know, you're not, it's not too surprising, but the retaliation that's coming right away, it's kind of what people talked about last year. Every good hit deserves a good punch, you know, and I think that's what's happening in a lot of cases. A lot of times hits are relatively, you know, I think that the, you know, for example, the Mike Richards hit on David Booth, I don't think it was a dirty hit. I think it was an unfortunate hit, consequences obviously, but it was a split second thing. And, you know, there, of course, there was no retaliation in that case.
That's a whole other, we'll get to that.
I'm thinking actually last night, too, like with Rob Scuderi. Mm-hmm. And his hit was borderline. I think he went down real low. He was trying to get a hip check in, and he went down real low, and he clipped Chimera around the knees. Dangerous hit. Chimera thinks it was pretty dirty. I don't think Scuderi necessarily tried to be dirty, but it, nevertheless, he had him go end over end. As soon as the guy went down, one of Chimera's teammates, Derek Dorsett, came charging over and wanted to stand up for his teammate. So this is what you're seeing. Even if they're clean hits, you see guys are coming after it, and this is kind of the new code of the game.
Yeah, the thing with the Scuderi hit that I was just looking at was great because I was able to pause it at the perfect second, right as he's hitting him. And as far as the hit goes, it looks like his hands are on the ground. Like, I mean, that's pretty low.
Yeah, it is pretty low.
But at the same time, you know, is it, if it's just a matter of him saying, well, it wasn't really dirty. I just lost control of, you know, my momentum, whatever it may be. I mean, you could argue that, you know, they tell players you have to control your stick. So, you know, why not?
Listen, I heard Scuderi speak after the game. And he talked about it. He said he didn't think it was a dirty hit. He said if it did end up pretty low, it wasn't intentional, so he didn't want to hurt the guy.
And I
kind of believe that because I don't see him going after guys with dirty plays or, like, you know, playing that kind of game. But it was very low to get that, you know, a hip check. You're kind of, you know, you have to hit the guy basically hip on hip or somewhere in the abdomen, and kind of flip him that way.
And his whole body was below Chimera's
waist. Yeah, it was. And again, you know, these things happen really fast. You go down a little lower, maybe the guy is not standing up as straight as you thought as when he was coming in at you. You know, so things happen. And again, you know, I think that the key thing is whether it's intentional or not. I don't think in this case it was. In some other instances that we're going to talk about last week, there might have been a different story.
So, well, we might as well go through some of those instances. Obviously, we've gotten Scuderi down. Tuomo Ruutu.
Tuomo Ruutu, yeah. He hit Darcy Tucker pretty hard. And
that was just dumb.
It was. I mean, you know, again, I think this comes back to what we were talking about last year. You know, there was a lot of debate, and actually in the last couple of years, about hits from behind and what's dirty and you know, is there a lack of respect among some players? It seems that way with some of the hits that you've been seeing around the NHL. Ruutu saw Tucker was close enough to the wall, you know, with his head turned that way. You're running a guy from behind. You know, what do you expect? I mean, you're going to hit the guy. I think you have to figure you're going to hurt him. Even if you say there was no intent there, what else, you know, were you trying to do?
Well, for me, the one thing that stood out about that hit was this, you could see Tucker's back to the wall, and it almost looked like Ruutu, the way he brought his momentum in, he, like, raised his stick. He was going to go into him. You had to say there was some intent. The way that his body was positioned, it wasn't like his stick was on the ice and he was just bumping him against the glass. He was going in there with Tucker's, you know, face to the glass.
No, really. And, you know, the thing is, though, I think it's an interesting question sometimes when you listen to the players afterwards and they're saying, we had no intent to hurt. I don't think they really go out, I want to hurt this guy, but they want to make this guy feel it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, whether you actually in your mind can conceive of trying to differentiate between hitting the guy where you take him out of the play so hard or like hurting him, there's probably a very fine line. I don't think the intent is I want to maim this guy, but, you know, I want to hit him hard enough that he's going to feel and remember the next time when he hears my footsteps. That was, you have to be able to hold up, I think, and certainly when you have a guy's back to you and he's that close to the wall, to the boards or to the glass, you know, there's got to be some common sense in there. And what is the intent of that? I mean, the same thing last week with Daniel Zubrus.
Gomez, right?
No, it was. I was thinking of Kozlov, Slava Kozlov.
Oh, okay.
Slava Kozlov last week in the Atlanta game. Yeah, it was Kozlov. Yeah, he hit him from behind. I mean, you know, Gomez was against the boards. He had just dumped the pass, dumped the puck away, and he had his shoulder slightly turned. Kozlov basically cross-checked him. He went head-first into the boards. Gomez wasn't hurt for it. So he got up, matter of fact, and he went right after Kozlov as the retaliation. It's a pretty cheap hit. Again, Kozlov is not a dirty player, but you have to understand when a guy is in a vulnerable position that close to the boards, you probably have to, you know, think twice.
Do you think it's at the point where the league is not looking? They're almost turning the other cheek on this, that they should be enforcing it, even some if something's not called in a game, that they should be looking at some of these things and handing out fines, or, you know, I mean, if it's happening.
Well, they do. The league does look at it. The question is, you know,
should they be handing out fines and whatnot?
Well, they could be, but the thing is, you have a debate. The Scuderi hit is a perfect example of this.
Yeah.
Everybody on the Columbus side thinks it was a dirty, cheap shot. Everybody on the Los Angeles side thinks it was a clean hit. And the same thing with David Booth. Florida, dirty, cheap shot.
Yeah.
Philadelphia, it's a hockey hit. And, you know, there's a very, very fine line in a game that moves this fast and things happen at split-second speed and players turn their head for a half a second, you dish off the puck, you turn, boom, you hit. So it's tough. I mean, if it's blatant and you hurt somebody, yeah, I think so. But sometimes these things happen in a rough physical game.
Yeah, I mean, I've never played hockey, but obviously the physical part of it, you know, is a huge part of the game. But I think the one thing I'm always scared about, especially I referee rugby games, and the one thing we're always told to watch out for is head injuries. And the whole Booth thing, he was clearly going for Booth's head. I mean, obviously it was a clean check, but he caught him in the head regardless of what
he caught him in the head.
And those are the most, we all know that the repercussions of head injuries can be worse than, say, a shoulder or or a knee injury. And the head injuries, the part of it is the thing that I'm worried about. These guys, especially the guys facing the boards, are going to go head for it. We've seen guys get paralyzed from things like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The league's got, I think it seems like every season we go through this phase of a week or so where there's a bunch of different hits. I think it's just a fluke, really. But I think the league is going to have to come down at some point on hits that are going to possibly paralyze somebody.
Well, I think the league, you know, looks at intentional hits to the head are punished. There's no question about it. I think the real issue is always determining what is an intentional hit to the head and what is a coincidental hit. Because, again, even though Booth was hit in the head basically with the shoulder by the time the contact was made, I don't know that Richards was going for his head. I think the way Booth dished off the puck and was leaning just, you know,
it
happened
was
to
just awful timing.
Right, it was awful timing. I think certainly Richards saw him basically maybe with his head down and a chance to take a hit at to hit him, no question about it. But I think the force of the hit and the way it actually ended up was more a coincidence of the timing and all the circumstances than anything else. And again, if you're on the Florida side, you say this guy should be suspended. It's vicious, vicious, vicious. And if you're on the Philadelphia side, it's a hockey hit, and the truth probably lies somewhere in between.
Oh, well, I think with the Booth hit especially, it was one of those where when you see it, the aftermath, it was definitely what's going to spark your, well, it's, you know, it's dirty.
Sure, a guy's carried off in a stretcher. You know what I mean?
No, but I mean, just even, I mean, the split second after, when he gets hit, I mean, I can't imagine he had any memory of that, you know, that moment. And, it was obviously, you know, following the Panthers, it was a clip I watched over and over and over. And honestly, I could not see that it was dirty. The aftermath was horrendous. But you know what? Richards never left his feet. He never got his arm up. His shoulder may have been a little bit, but even that, he was a little bit more crouched down. He wasn't standing, you know, straight up to deliver this hit. So, you know, and again, the timing of it, Richards is committed to this hit just as Booth is dishing the puck off on just a little tap pass to his teammate. And, you know, Booth, just as he turns his head straight again, bam, that's when it happens. And it was terrible. You know, you feel bad when you see players like in that situation, but That one was.
I only saw it once. Now, how far was the puck? He didn't have the puck at the time, right?
He just got rid of it. It was
okay.
A split, yeah. You know, second, and I know Richard said his intent was to just knock the puck off of his stick. And
right.
Yeah, he did a little bit more than just knock that kind of momentum.
But remember this, because Booth is a left-hand shot, and he was cutting towards the center of the ice, and he backhanded a pass to Weiss, who was on his left wing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So by doing that, he had to look back to his left, and Richards was coming from the other side, and that's really where the collision and why, you know, it was such a violent collision.
And he wasn't coming from just the you know, right to his
it was a
side.
Blind. It was a
it
blind.
Wasn't. Yeah, it was kind of from Booth's Bump. Right and a little to behind him because
yeah.
Richards kind of came from behind. But you know, it was just the aftermath was just kind of sickening.
It sort of reminded me of one of those blocks you get in football on the special teams. You know,
right.
The guy doesn't see it coming and ends up on the ground, but it's just part of the game. Yeah,
yeah, it distracted me from the Gators falling apart at the end of it. but moving on, as far as some other hits too, I know we were talking a little bit before about the
that whole game. I mean, there was a couple other games.
Oh God! I'm holding out for that. But there's one more hit I wanted to throw out, and this was the Ovechkin and Peverley.
The slew foot.
Yes.
Yeah.
To me, it was stupid. It looked like he was going to check it, and he got a little too into the check, and you know, but you can't do that sort of thing.
You can't do that unless you're Alex Ovechkin, and then you can get, you know, you find what did they slap him on the wrist? It was like $2,500 fine, I think it was. Okay,
that's pocket change.
That is that's not even a night out on the town. So the thing is, you know. You have Artukin,
Artukin
on Anaheim the night before, or two nights before, doing the exact same thing on Niskanen of the Dallas Stars, and he gets 3 games for it because he's a repeat offender, whereas Alex is a money maker.
And he is not Alex Ovechkin.
Well, you know, and it's a funny thing is, and you know, I understand that, you know, with a star like Alex Ovechkin, you're going to probably grant him a little more leeway. Obviously, you want to not have to have him out of a game if you don't have to. I understand that. But if you are seriously intent on sending a message, who better than to, you know, to make a first strike offender than somebody of that caliber that, you know, you send a message to everybody. You do this no matter who you are, no matter what it is, we don't tolerate it.
Yeah, and the mention of being a repeat offender that he supposedly isn't, technically he is, because a couple of years ago he had an incident. I don't believe he was fined, or maybe he was fined, but I know he was definitely not suspended, where he hit Daniel Briere.
Yes.
And you know, that was one of our somewhat questionable, you know, hits, I believe.
I think he hit him head first, he ran him into the board.
Well, now I gotta see the video again. This is what, like 2-3 years ago?
It was pretty bad. But
Ovechkin seems to get away with stuff, because of who he is, but also because they seem he has to sort of add that crazy element to him.
Yeah.
He seems to always be playing just on the edge, and you know, he's always that crazy guy, and you see him off the ice, he's just kind of a little off, but I think that also helped his cause as well.
Well, maybe, you know, and you're right, he does play the game on the edge, and that's what is so good about his game. He does play on the edge, but the thing is, anybody who plays on the edge still has to be within a certain boundary, and you can't let them go over that edge. And I think, again, I understand the fact that he hasn't been suspended before this, so technically he's not a repeat offender. Yeah, fine. But the thing is this, if you really want to send a message and you want to say it doesn't matter who you are or what you know, if you do something that's that blatantly against the rules, you're going to get punished for it.
Yeah. Westfield commissioner.
Yeah, right. Give me the job. I'll get that franchise in Hamilton.
You're going to get a lot of love letters from the Canadian listeners today. But as far as these hits go, one other thing to throw out, and we were discussing this too. What was the one thing you noticed in all of these hits? You know, whether it be the Scuderi hit, the Ruutu hit, I guess you could say the Richards hit. What was one thing that stood out that did happen and didn't happen in some of these?
Retaliation, I believe, in many cases, except when it came to the Florida Panthers, which I know makes you very happy that they stood up for the teammates so well.
And it wasn't the only incident in that game.
Yeah, there was two others. I think Radek Dvorak took a knee from Daryl Powell, and Dominic Moore got run into the glass behind the boards pretty heavily by Tolofsen. And, you know, again, this is, okay, play continue.
Well, the one thing I did read about why they said we're not going to retaliate is they did have a 5-on-3, the major penalty that they could score on. They wanted to make them hurt, but this is a team that barely score.
Well,
so
that's what I'm saying. I know. We wanted to hurt them on the scoreboard, right? But you have to score to do that, right?
Exactly. So I don't know if that was just delusional thinking or, you know.
I think there's a lot of that going on these days in that team.
So I guess speaking of the Panthers, we might as well jump. It's just about the 10-game mark for most of these teams. And, you know, we have some pretty surprising and disappointing efforts so far. I guess the question is, which teams 10 games in need to start shaking things up, or at least start looking at shaking things up?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, I think the way the NHL is set up now, the salary cap, I don't think that's possible, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the reality of the way the business works now. You can't make many changes because you have to move salaries to do things. So I think a lot of teams are pretty much stuck. But I think, for example, Toronto, you know, this, I know I'm on
theme.
Them.
The theme.
But here's the thing. The one thing that I find really interesting is that Brian Burke, for all of his talk about changing the dynamics there, and he made a lot of moves this summer, which really haven't panned out yet. Mm-hmm. He's also talked about burying contracts. You know, the organization is so cash rich and they're so profitable that they can afford to bury some of the contracts in the minors, mm-hmm. get them off the books and clear the space, which theoretically would give them the leeway to make moves. He hasn't done that yet. I think that would be a step. I don't know, again, you know, how anxious the organization, the Brain Trust and Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment is about, you know, paying all this extra money for nothing to minor leaguers. But that would be one team I think that probably has the potential to shake things up more than anybody because mm-hmm. they have the means or the ability to absorb all that kind of money and you know, make changes along those lines. But certainly, I think the Carolina Hurricanes are a team that would need to make some changes because they haven't really looked as good as most people thought they would be, mm-hmm. given their strong second half and their pretty good playoff showing last year. Eric Staal's having a tough year. They're not getting much from the back end in terms of jumping to the rush and helping with the offense, and I think it's showing up front as well. So I think that's a team that probably would look to do, you know, some changes as well. You know, everybody at this point realizes where their holes are. And, you know, I think the truth is, for GMs, after 10 games, you see, now I have a realistic understanding of what my team is. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. there may have been a certain sense of optimism in training camp and going through it. And, you know, we're coming the season, we have hopes and everything. After 10 games, you kind of see what your team can do and what it can't do. And it's kind of disappointing for some guys, but there's not really much you can do.
I guess to stick with Toronto, I mean, obviously, you know, the offseason there, the fact that they did go out and they made some pretty big moves. They get Phil Kessel. You know, I know he's not playing yet, but was it unrealistic for them, for fans or anyone to say, yeah, this is a year we could contend for the playoffs? Or really, is it a year that they should be saying, yeah, it's going to be a bad year, and that's fine because we are still growing. Luke Shen's, you know, he's a sophomore. He's having a little bit of, you know, a tough time.
Yeah.
You know, the goaltending was always in question. Gustafson has had his medical issues already. I mean, was it really fair for, I mean, is it something where they should be saying, you know, yeah, we need to be a playoff team this year?
Well, they've been rebuilding since the lockout. I don't think they've made the playoffs since the lockout. So the thing is, there's a lot of hope attached to Brian Burke. This is the miracle work. He's coming in and boom, he's got the magic touch. You know, everything's going to change. He, you know, to whatever degree you want to blame him, but he has raised the bar or raised the expectations himself because he's like that. He's a natural, you know, media player, I guess. I mean, you know, he gets out there and he talks a big game. And, you know, maybe the Leafs will do better. Maybe things will work out ultimately. But certainly, the way that team has played through the first 8 or 9 games has been abysmal. I mean, you know, they can't score. You know, their offense is horrible. I don't think they've led. They've scored first in any game yet this year. And, you know, when you're behind the eight ball to start with and you don't have much of an offense, it makes life real tough.
As far as Florida goes, that's...
But nobody was thinking about contending here, were they?
Well, did no, I'm not saying playoffs.
Perhaps, you know.
Maybe they were. I mean, to be one point out. But, I mean, is that a team that needs to start blowing things up? Because, you know, you don't make the playoffs for 8-9 years.
Well, here's
and it's not working.
Right, it's not working, and I think, you know, part of the issue is how do you do that? Because you have a lot of expensive contracts you're locked into, and mm-hmm. I think one of the worst ones, honestly, I think is in goal with Volkoon. Yeah. I think Volkoon, his play over the last couple of years has declined, certainly. I don't think he's the elite goalie he was in his prime with in the prime days at Nashville, but they're locked into a very expensive contract. It cost them Craig Anderson, and that's the reality. I think Anderson was a better goalie last year. Mm-hmm. I think they would have been better off had they been able to keep him, and obviously Colorado is very happy they weren't.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have that kind of deal. You can't do anything with that kind of contract. He's got another year or 2 years left on that deal. You just can't do anything, and you're stuck at that salary, and that's a big, big chunk of your salary. And, mm-hmm. you know, have a lot of expensive players. Nathan Horton's another player that, you know, that's an expensive contract for players not producing like a $4 million player. So,
yeah.
When you talk, again, this goes back to the idea of changing. It's very, very tough now because of the salaries and where teams are locked in. You can't just move players. You have to be able to move salary. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want to take your problems on.
How about the Ducks, just looking at the Pacific Division, which is top to bottom kind of surprising. You have the Kings up top with an 8-4 record, 16 points. And yet the Ducks, who a lot of us thought they'd probably be where, you know, up where the Kings are, they have just 7 points. They're 5 points out of fourth place.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing because I thought the Ducks would be Stanley Cup contenders, you know, mm-hmm. to win the West and represent the West. They looked very good at the end of last year. But as Ross can tell you, I'm sure Bobby Ryan hasn't been around anywhere this year. Getzlaff is off to an awful start. And their goaltending, Jaguar, has looked really bad when he's played, and Hiller hasn't looked much better.
That must be the fantasy curse. That's another guy I picked up.
Who did you pick up?
Jaguar.
Yeah, I mean, the Ducks offensively, I'm looking at the top 30 forwards right now. There's not one Duck in there.
Yeah, well, if you don't have Ryan and Getzlaff, Bobby Ryan and Getzlaff scoring goals, I mean, mm-hmm.
I think they'll turn it around. Just take some time.
Could be. But, you know, again,
still very early.
It's very early, but the points they're losing now, you know, races are very tight. You lose, you fall 4 or 5 points behind, 8 points behind, 9 points behind. It's very tough to make it up at the end.
Panthers know that.
Yes.
And I guess as far sticking out in the West there, one team that I think probably has everyone kind of stunned is Detroit. Detroit's off to a 3-4-2 start. They're fourth in the Central. They've lost 4 of their last 5 and 3 straight, and 2 of those against Colorado, 1 against Phoenix.
Yeah, you know, I'm starting to wonder about this. It's like, is it possible to have a Stanley Cup hangover in a year when you don't win the Cup? Because they didn't seem to have one last year, you know, when they won, and now they didn't win, and it seems like everything is hitting them. But obviously, like, there's been some personnel changes. I didn't think, you know, going to the season, I knew, like, Hossa, obviously, losing him was a factor. But again, they didn't have him the year before, and mm-hmm. they won the Stanley Cup, you know. So I didn't know how much about, you know, that would cost them. But obviously, with Hudler going and Capecchi and Samuelson, they've lost some offense. Certainly, their offense hasn't been as good.
And then to lose
Franzen. And to lose Franzen, in the season. Zetterberg and Datsyuk are not off to dominance. It's almost like these guys... Only, you know, they crank it up more as the season gets more serious towards the second half and towards the playoffs. And their goaltending this year has been awful. I mean, it's not only number-wise, and we were talking about this earlier. Yeah. Their numbers are probably maybe a little worse than last year, but the kind of goals, the type of goals that Osgood and Jimmy Howard are giving up are just really, really, like, killers. I mean, backbreakers, whatever you want to call it. And, Detroit, you know, the thing is, Detroit is probably come back much closer to the pack as a result this year. The Central Division is a tough division. Mm-hmm. The Western Conference, obviously, with upstarts like Colorado and Los Angeles, from other divisions, it's a lot tougher for Detroit to win games.
Yeah, and just to discuss the numbers for Detroit last year, I mean, their goaltending wasn't great last year.
Right.
And they were giving up their goals against average team-wise was 2.93. They were 20th in the league. This year, they're 3.33. And the thing that I think offset them last year, their goals against, they led the league. It was like 3.5, and this year it's just 2.7. So, mm-hmm. I mean, at least last year with the goaltending being bad.
They were scoring.
Right. This year it's just all kind of coming apart on them.
But if you look at the games they play and you watch them, it's not only – I mean, the goals are – some of the goals look really bad and they're coming at inopportune times. But the team itself, I've seen a lot of giveaways from players – that normally, you know, would not give the puck away. They're turning the puck over in their own end. They're not clearing their zone when they have to. It's just little things in the game that you would think Detroit has down. They don't have down yet.
Do you think that's something that's a team that might benefit from a couple changes here and there, maybe bring someone in? They can afford to do it.
Well, do they have the room under the cap? And you know, they're not a team that can bury salary either. I mean, they, you know, if they could afford to bring people in, they probably wouldn't have lost Hossa, you know. I think that they're kind of like stretched with, in a lot of ways with guys that are tied up. But, you know, again, they have to find pieces. And usually Detroit kind of fills the holes through their system. But Darren Helm hasn't started off all that well. I think he was hurt actually earlier in the year. Justin Advocator was sent back down the minors, back and forth. Leno hasn't been super sharp to start the year. And they kind of had expectations of him taking the next step and maybe filling more of the role that Hudler filled last year. So some of the things that have happened for Detroit in the past where the players have stepped up and made this seamless transition don't seem to be happening quite as easily this year. Not at all, actually, you know, given their record.
So maybe the luck system-wise has run out?
It has to sometime.
It's true.
But, you know, I mean, you know, we'll see as the season wears on, but I think, you know, the early signs are Detroit, and I think teams are looking at them too, and there's another psychological factor. They don't look at them as kind of invincible anymore, you know? Yeah. I think, you know, we can beat this team.
So I guess moving along to some other turnarounds here. Some guys who stood out, I guess, 10 games in. One guy that we were talking about before, Dustin Penner, off to a pretty solid start in Edmonton. I guess coaching change has helped kind of give him a fresh fresh slate.
And I believe the loss of about 20 pounds hasn't hurt either. No, I'm serious. I mean, he came into to camp in real good shape, and that's made a difference. I think he's been a lot more energetic. The coaches have said that, you know, you see a lot more jump in his play. And when there's more jump in his play, that's his game. He's big. He's physical. He's around the net. He's not being moved. He's hitting people in the corners, and he's producing offense. This is the guy that Edmonton, you know, paid for. Right, and that Kevin Lowe basically got into like a lifelong feud with Brian Burke over. But, yeah, this is the guy they wanted, and he's starting to show it this year. He's played on a line lately with Alex Hemsky and Sam Gagne. And I think last week they had on a game when two of them had 5 points each, and that the line together had 13 points or something. So, yeah, they look pretty good together.
Who else is sticking out?
I like Ryan Smith. I mean, I got to tell you, the way he's played in Los Angeles, you know, he had a so-so year in Colorado's tough situation. He's hurt a lot there, but I mean, he's come on gangbusters this year. He really has, and he's been very, very impressive. I think that Paul Kariya has had a very good start in St. Louis as well. So I look at some of these guys, they're starting off on the right foot.
Just jumping back to the Kings, I mean, one guy for me that stood out is Kopitar. I mean, he's always had good seasons, and I know last year it was kind of people, I guess, expected a little bit more from him. And this year, I mean, it's kind of shocking that he's leading the league in
scoring. Yeah,
in scoring.
But Smith has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, it's they are playing on the top line together, and it seems that trade really, you know, gave the spark that top line needed in LA.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kings look very good.
How about Ross? Any fantasy guys sticking out?
I'm just looking down my list here. I print out the top 30 spots at each, you know, forward, defenseman, and goalie. Vinny Prospel in New York has surprised me a little bit. He had a bit of a slump in week three, but I mean, the Rangers as a whole, I think, have offensively have surprised a little bit. Who else did I mark down here? Rene Bourque out of Calgary, 12th in fantasy scoring this year among forwards. Rich Peverley's hanging in there, who's on my team. I actually dropped him earlier this year and picked him up. He's 21st in scoring.
And that's pretty impressive because I don't think he's playing on the top line.
No, he's back down on the second line now, but he's still managing to produce somehow.
What about Briere? I mean, where is he? Because he had a pretty slow start last year. It seems like he's scoring a lot this year.
Yeah, he's on my team. He's not in the top 30 right now, but I'm sure he's pretty close. Let me see who else I had on my list here. Yeah, that's probably about it for surprises. Yeah, you mentioned Penner. Obviously, he's fifth. Mm-hmm. He's fifth amongst fantasy. And defenseman, obviously, good. Michael Delzato, who's actually leading the fantasy defenseman at the moment.
I was stunned by that. I think our fantasy hockey writer Mike Hercombe has jumped on his bandwagon and grabbed him.
I'm sure Mr. Simaluka wasn't surprised. You know, he knows all these Rangers guys. And Drew Doughty's currently ranked third amongst defensemen. Obviously, you know, showed some potential last year, but he's really come through on the offensive side of things this year. Alex Goligoski's fourth amongst defensemen.
And that's a guy who I believe was stepping in, you know, he's getting more time now that, you know, Gill and Scuderi got out of there.
And he'll get more now that Gonchar is gone. Because that's going to, that's an issue for Pittsburgh.
And goalies, we talked about a few of them last week. Craig Anderson, Jonathan Quick, Brizgalov, obviously, we know he's talented, but nobody knew how well Phoenix would be doing this year.
I don't think anyone expected Phoenix to be doing what they're doing right now. Although, I should say, I think give credit to Dave Tippett, because obviously he's not a bad coach. You know, last year he just got stuck in a bad situation that, you know, they needed to make some changes there. But, he's a good coach, and to be able to, you know, take a team that's just has so many off-ice problems and get them focused to be where they are.
That's Coach of the Year stuff.
Because, I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Because he took over, a week before was the training camp start or before the season start?
Before the season started, they were in the camp already.
Right, yeah, they were like near the end of the camp. That's right, it was the end of September. So he basically took over a week before, you know, the season started. Here's the clipboard. You know, we have like probably the worst team in hockey. We have all these kids. We don't know, you know, what we have in here. Fix it up. And boy, yeah, really, what a job.
And I think the interesting thing about the way Phoenix has handled their situation is they took their kids and they sent them back to the minors. And that, you know, it makes you wonder if, you know, maybe the idea of building through the youth was forced way, way too quickly. Because at least the AHL, they're tearing it up in San Antonio. I believe that's their farm team.
Yeah,
they're doing really well.
It's a good thing for them to develop that way. But then again, you got to figure if the NHL is going to pay the bills all season, you might as well hire more expensive talent
at
the NHL level. Hey, bring in veterans. What do we care?
This is true.
Yeah, I was going to ask a couple of fantasy questions if I got some time.
For
you two.
Sure.
Just looking at this list here, I got the top 30, as I said, each defenseman, forward, and goalie. And there are some free agents out there in our experts league.
Oh, I could use free agents.
I've picked two from each position here, and tell me what you think about these two. On the defenseman side of things, out of San Jose, we've got Jason Demers, who's 15th in scoring, and then Adrian O'Coin is having a nice season and is 17th. Who would you rather have out of those two?
I just think he'll get more ice time, more chances to be on. He plays more in the power play. In San Jose, you have Blake and Boyle basically as the D-men on the power play. So I think, if you're looking for points, if that's what your criteria is, then you're looking at O'Coin.
Yeah, and I think I would go with O'Coin just on the basis of we've seen what he's done in the past. Demers is, still a question mark. And like you say, with San Jose having the defenseman it has, I believe he's on their third pairing anyway.
Right.
So
yeah, I saw him out there. I forget who I ended up picking up. I thought about him for a little bit, but ended up going in a different direction. On the forward side of things, in the top 30, which Aaron Brown only has one player
well,
in the top 30,
let's
I might
see.
Add.
Let's see. I lost Franzen. Crosby's, I guess, the only one who's doing anything. Yeah, my team's a mess.
Crosby should make your whole team better.
He should. But he unfortunately does not play with Thomas Vanek and Jean Tavares.
Details.
Oh, it's just a mess.
But at the lower end of things here, we've got Dustin Brown as a free agent out of the league, and also Ryan O'Reilly out of Colorado. Obviously, the Kings, Dustin Brown had a quiet first couple of weeks, but really exploded this week, 20.5 points. While O'Reilly's been a little steadier these last couple of weeks. But he's a youngster, right, O'Reilly?
He's 18 years old, yeah. He's one of those teen superstars they have in Colorado. I think Paulie Brown at this point, Brown's a real good player, and I think the Kings are playing really good hockey, and I think they're going to play better as the season moves along. And again, he plays on the second line because Kopitar and Smith and either Hanzus or Justin Williams are on the first line.
Yeah, Williams is.
Williams with them for the most part, but Brown, the second line, is going to pick up points, and I think he's going to get some power play time, and I think that team is going to create a lot for him, and he's going to capitalize.
So you think the Kings long term? Hanging on longer than the Avalanche will throughout
the
season?
I don't know about that. It's just that O'Reilly right now is, he scored some goals, but he's also a third line player. He's done a very good job penalty killing. So he's more, his game still is more about the defense than the offensive side. Whereas I think Brown, again, it depends on your criteria, but if you're looking for a guy to put up points, I think Brown is the guy.
Yeah, and as far as the lines go, I definitely haven't seen O'Reilly crack the top two.
Yeah, he's right.
And he's not going to bump off Stastny. He's not going to bump off Duchesne.
Right.
So probably go with Brown.
On the goalie side of things, obviously in our league we start two goalies, so they're at a bit of a
I hate that
premium.
I really hate that. I need to complain more about our system. I don't like
you got two. You got two in the top 20 at the moment. Although
what is it? 19 and 20.
No, you got Tim Thomas at 15, and then
Pavlik
at 20. Who you just picked up, I think, last week, right?
Yeah, I think as soon as I picked him up, he started losing. I don't know that he's gotten me a win yet.
didn't he give up a goal from the other team's goal line against Washington? It was basically almost an icing. It bounced six times and right over his shoulder.
I'm positive I curse my fantasy team. It's just cursed this year.
We'll see. It's still there, but we're both 0-3, so I'm in the same boat as you. But
yeah, but it seems everyone I pick up just either goes down or starts to slump or...
You know what, honestly, although when you're talking about Pavlik, and here's something you have to be concerned about, that if Kovalchuk is he's going to be examined today, if he's hurt and he's out for an extended time, that's going to hurt Atlanta. He's not going to get many.
Definitely.
Time to go back to the free agent list.
Two free agents we've got in our league towards the bottom of the list here in the top 30. Dan Ellis out of Nashville and the interesting Yaroslav Halak in Montreal, who has been getting a ton of starts lately because Mr. Price can't seem to figure out what's wrong. Which of those two would you think would be a nice pickup for some people out there?
See, you know, I was looking at the free agent list today, and I wasn't sold on either of those guys just because...
Right, I mean, clearly it's going to be based on potential, whoever you pick up. You know, there's no guarantee the rest of the way, but I don't see Halleck replacing Price on a permanent basis.
And I know Rene's having enough problems that it doesn't look like he's going to be bumping Ellis off. I guess Ellis, I mean, you know, he's a guy who...
What's the deal in Nashville where a goalie has a great year and can't do it the next year? It happened. Mason went to Ellis. Ellis went to Rene. And now Rene's back to Ellis. Seriously, every year. But, yeah, continue. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to...
No. I just...
It just means just stay away from the Nashville situation in general.
As far as goaltending, one thing I look at is, the guy I was looking for was Quick, but, he's going to be sitting out there. No, of course not. This is why I hate the two-goalie thing, because, you know, people start stocking up on goalies, and end up getting scraps. So it's really... I guess I would go with Ellis in that situation.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Is your criteria wins?
Oh, that's part of it, shots are in there too. Jonathan
Quick killed me. I think I lost by 6 points, and he got eight points for his owner last night to knock me off. So
I would go for Halak, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
I think he's played well. I think they're gonna ride him. Canadians are starting to look not bad the last couple of games. I know the first two games they won last week were against Atlanta, which was a shootout, and then the Islanders, which maybe doesn't say much, but they look really good against the... No, seriously, they look really good against the Rangers. I mean, they were skating. All this thing about this team being really small but fast, they're really small, but they're really fast. they were moving. I mean, the Rangers couldn't keep up with them, I thought, Saturday. And Halak is playing well, and I think they're playing better in front of him, and I think they're going to ride him for a while.
But but he can't be like a long term. At least fantasy wise, he couldn't be a long term.
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of... I got to tell you, there's a lot of people who believe that he is, and have believed for several years that he is maybe better than Price. Mm-hmm. But Price is still the prize. He was like their first round pick a couple of years ago. He's the guy that's been pumped up. This is our next Ken Dryden and Patrick Roy all rolled into one. And I think they've been giving Price as long a shot as they possibly can without it killing them. And I think, you know, Price is under pressure. The fans are hooting and hollering against him. They got Halak, who's winning games. And I think if Halak plays well and the team kind of gels in front, in front of him, really, I think, he will be the starter going forward.
So they don't care. So I guess in Montreal it wouldn't come down to why is our prized guy sitting on the bench.
Because
as long as we're getting wins, we don't care.
Well,
I mean,
absolutely, because you know what? Sure. Price has been under fire for losing and losing the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, he had his shot, and maybe, you know, and maybe it was too young to give him the shot. Maybe
I was just going to say, did they bring him up too quickly?
Well, you can say they shouldn't have traded away a couple years ago and thrown Price into the fire in the playoffs right away. They did. Maybe it would better serve letting him continue as an understudy for a couple of years. But the point is, that's the way they did it. Mm-hmm. They tried it. He hasn't looked all that good. He's had a lot of shaky moments, and the team is winning with Halak. So that's what counts, bottom line.
That's one to keep an eye on. Yeah, don't forget to set your fantasy lineups today for Fantasy Week 4, which begins tonight. I think we have three or four games tonight. On the schedule. Obviously, I'm going to go look right now as soon as we get done with this and see what Mr. Kovalchuk's news is. because a lot of people, I think he's owned in 100% of the league, so a lot of people will be interested to find out if he's going to be even going to play this week.
Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, he's not on my team. So.
There you go.
So I can't take the blame for that one. Well, that's all the time we have this week for the Odd Man Rush. Thanks for checking in, and listen next week when hopefully Greg will be back. So thanks for listening.